Welcome to episode 3A of A Link to the Cast on MP3, on download and online. We've got a brand new website, www.alinktothecast.co.uk as well. Do check that out. We've been having some really good feedback. You can email the studio from there as well, so do pick those up. This is episode 3A. We're going to be coming at you with episode 4 at the end of May. So this is a bit of an update for you where we touch on maybe a couple of topics maybe that we're looking to discuss, chew the cud over. Today's, or this update's, discussion topic is style over content. Where did it come from? It came from something we were talking about in episode 3, the game Mad World, which was one of these games which came out which sort of looked great, had a real sort of stylish twist to it. But actually, when you got under the skin of it, there wasn't that much beneath it, if you know what I mean. The content was, it was okay. Still got the regular team with us. Ricardo, our PS3 man.
Hello.
And Brian Shelf on the Xbox 360. He's also king of consoles.
I know, I'm no longer king of consoles.
Have you sold it?
I've got to hand my crown in. Yes. The PS3, after being sat there for a few weeks not being played, I decided that I could better invest my my funding somewhere else.
And where else is this going? I mean, what are you going to trade it for?
I'd kind of barely played it. It was getting in the way of me actually reviewing games, if you listen to the last one. I had so many games, so many consoles, I kind of just froze. So that one's gone off to a better home. Someone will enjoy it more than I was doing. So I'm back to just being almost... I'm kind of crown prince of consoles, maybe, with three.
I'm not sure if you can have a sort of a lesser position. I think once you're handing your crown...
This is it. I mean, I've never made the claim to be a king of consoles, but I do, in fact, have an Xbox 360 in the back. It's a debug one, though, and chances of getting actual debug code to play on it is actually quite hard.
You got debug?
I got debug 360, so I've never claimed to be a king of consoles because I don't use the damn thing.
Yeah, this is true. Adam's on buttons as well, our producer as well. A link to thecast.co.uk is the website. There's this discussion. I've sort of three trains of thought on style over content. There's games that play badly but look great. Hmm. There are games that play brilliantly but look bad. And then there are games... Well, I suppose there's four. There's games that look and play brilliantly, and then there's the games which just look bad and play bad. Yeah. I'm just going to sort of discount, you know, carnival games and all those sorts of things. I'm just going to discount them. So I'm going to focus on the three. Games that play badly but look great. Games that play brilliantly but look bad. And games that look and play brilliantly. I'm going to start with the first. Games that look great. And actually, when you get into them, play badly. Mad World was my example of that. Looking at a lot of the forums online, Mirror's Edge on the PS3 gets a lot of these reviews. Games which look... I mean, it looks absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you've played it.
Yeah, absolutely. I went through the whole thing and I came away from it just feeling a little bit empty, you know? Just a little bit bored of it.
I've only very briefly played it, but people who played it longer have said that it's almost that the style has got in the way of the content.
Yeah,
because
there's
so many impressive backgrounds and cityscapes that the programmers have felt duty-bound to put some really boring, sloggish puzzles in there.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you can appreciate the backgrounds more, and those aren't the fun parts of the game.
No, you're right. It's an absolutely stunning game to look at, but really, it's just the same things over and over again, and I think that's going to be one of the recurring themes of these games.
I think
just repetition.
We've actually hit the nail on the head, I think, with the first game, and that developers think this game is going to look fantastic.
Yeah.
But actually, that hampers what you can actually do with it once you've created it. I suppose on the flip side, Brian, is Grand Theft Auto, where a game which looks fantastic and actually it has got gameplay to match, would you say?
Well, I think the interesting thing about Grand Theft Auto is, particularly Grand Theft Auto 4, it was a leap up, but not a massive leap up from where the series had been previously. And in comparison to some other games, it's not quite as polished. It's kind of glitchy in parts.
I think
you get pop up in the background.
Been the trick with Grand Theft Auto. They've never tried to push the graphical envelope because they want to cram so many other things into it anyway.
Well that's it. And as an advantage, you don't have long loading times. You know, you have it when you're going into the task and things like that, but you can pretty much free roam anywhere you want, and it's kind of the price you pay, and you get used to it after a while. You get used to the fact that you'll go into a room and you'll have been in there 30 seconds and then a desk appears, because it's the actual your interaction with the game that's so important. And I mean, other games you know, by the same studio, where there was Midnight Club Los Angeles, which I really got into, loading times are virtually non-existent in it. You kind of do something, you fly up out of the map, fly somewhere else into the map, and it's so much more immersive that you'll forgive the fact that it isn't, you know, incredibly great quality.
And a game which I want to pick up with Rick, actually, Now, Metal Gear.
Yeah, no, you're going to have a hard time bashing this one for me.
Now, for me, I've never really been able to get into it gameplay-wise, but I can appreciate that there's a sort of a style, a world has been created there, which people really get into. But actually, for me, it's the gameplay which lets it down.
Really? You see, for me, Metal Gear is absolutely one of the pinnacles of gameplay experiences. I can understand there's a lot of borders and a lot of walls for people trying to get into it because, like everybody moans about, and you know, it's been said so many times before, the cutscenes are so damn long, people just get bored and irritated by it. But the fact is, once you get into the world, there's so many little tricks and things, there's so many little niches and little characteristic behaviours of the characters in the game that it's really, really immersive. Like, playing through Metal Gear 4, you've got you go through it once and, you know, you're in the world and you're living it. And then, you know, if for a game to go back and make you want to replay it, it's got to have extras. It's got to have little quirks and things. And, like, you've got your iPod in Metal Gear and you can actually download full-on Metal Gear podcasts straight to your console and actually listen to the design team and stuff talking about what they've done in the building of these levels and stuff, you know.
It's You're a talking different about level. Rival podcasts.
Yeah, there is only one podcast.
No. You see, this is a podcast you can only get from the game, you know. You know, it's not a podcast you can carry out and around.
Oh, my mind has been blown.
Yeah, exactly. It's Solid Snake's listening to a podcast, which obviously you're hearing, but you can't download it onto your MP3 player. It's something that you can only experience in the game, and it's given you extra content.
My ears are bleeding. That makes no sense to me.
Well, there you go, you know, and there's all sorts of other, like, niches, and, you know, you've got your comedy magazines, which have all the women in and stuff. No, not only can you use those for distraction, but you can also, in Metal Gear 4, you can use them to alleviate the tension in stress. In Solid Snake's behaviour.
Oh, please?
Yeah, absolutely. You can sit in the middle of a battlefield reading this strange mag and he will actually relax more because there's a stress meter thing going on in the background of Metal Gear 4.
I think we get what you're saying there.
But there's all sorts of funny little quirks and every item practically has at least like two or three different sort of ways of using it and different benefits and things for you as a player. And I think, you know, in terms of gameplay, it's almost limitless.
Okay.
I mean, style over content's been a thing throughout the history of games.
No, it hasn't. It's just this week it started.
But I was thinking back over some other games that I've played in my time, and I think one of the prime examples I can think of this or two were on the N64, both by the same studio, which is Acclaim. The first one being one called Shadow Man, and it was massively hyped up, and there were loads of absolutely gorgeous screenshots, and you know they were saying, you know, for the level, the degree that you can explore these massive terrains, it's, you know, it was comparable to Zelda. And then when it actually came,
it was about 60 quid when it came out as well.
It was stupidly expensive, and the game I thought was an absolute stinker. it had really serious control issues. The camera was...
The pace was no good either, was it?
The pace was no good. You could sort of die very easily. It was kind of pixel level of death that if your foot touched one thing, then that was it. You were dead. And, you know, I remember just coming away from it so disappointed because it had so much promise. And also slightly earlier than that, another Acclaim game. And I mean, Acclaim have made some fantastic games. This isn't a reflection of them as a whole, but I think occasionally they can get stuck in this, particularly with buying up licenses like Shadow Man. I thought one of the very early games on the N64, Turok, Dinosaur Hunter. The first one, again, it was these massive dinosaurs that looked really impressive, these big jungle scenes, this huge playable map. But that was one that had jumps of doom in it all the way through, these impossible leaps that you had to make.
But that was very much of the style of games back in the day, wasn't it? It was all about leaps of faith and stuff.
It was incredibly frustrating, again, compared to, say, like Zelda, where they introduced auto-jump, which people at first they heard and went, no, that's a terrible idea. Yeah. It takes the game out of the game. Yeah, and you actually discover, no, it doesn't. It just means you can explore much more freely and you can have more fun and you don't have to worry about pixel timing your jumps from place to place.
Going back to Turok, actually, they remade it, didn't they? And re-released it last year. And again, it was something that looked really good and utterly, utterly balls to play. It was just relentless, like generic bad guys and then a dinosaur and then another generic bad guy in a forest. It was just rubbish.
Well, I'll tell you what, should we stay on the N64? Because I've got two games I've written down here. Mm-hmm. A game which we've talked about in the past it was great at the time. If you look back at it now, graphically pretty poor, GoldenEye, and compare it to Perfect Dark, which was graphically superior, but actually gameplay-wise, wasn't quite on the money as much as 007 GoldenEye was.
Well, GoldenEye was probably the shooter that launched 3D shooters. Certainly for me, I remember spending countless hours playing that over and over again. But there was just something about Perfect Dark that didn't really lure me to it. I heard, you know, I'd seen a lot of shots about it and it looked pretty good.
It did look good.
Yeah, exactly. But for some reason, I wasn't interested in it. And a couple of friends that I had, one of them really, really loved it. And the other one just thought, you know what? Looks, but nothing else to it.
And it's got an alien called Elvis. I'll leave it. Thank you very much.
No.
I think the interesting thing about GoldenEye is, it's kind of a unique situation in gaming that probably won't happen again, is that a lot of the development team on GoldenEye had never worked in the games industry before. And I think it was reflected in the fact that it came out so long after the film and it was so long in development. But, you know, it was a game that was made by people who weren't, you know, natural born gamers.
And there were some really dodgy moments in there. If you were in some of the, I forget what the, was it bunker level?
There was a few bunker levels. There was a horrendous one where you kind of had to almost sneak through without getting killed.
Yeah, but what would happen, you'd be behind the doors. Remember, it was B to open the doors, and there'd be soldiers on the outside running at the door, but actually stop still, but their heads would be through the door, and you could shoot them from your side of the door.
That still happens in a plenty of games these days.
Yeah.
Actually, can I take you back 5 years? Does anyone remember GoldenEye Rogue Agent? Another re-release, another remake, and, you know, another reimagining of a game?
No, I don't remember that.
That's all you need to know. It was rubbish. Absolute balls again. Really, really poor. Why did they bother trying to make GoldenEye again? You know, it's so classic. Why would you try and ruin it? Which is exactly what they did, you know?
But I'm going to take you back even further.
Even further than 2005.
In the style and content debate. I remember way back on the Spectrum, either 48 or 128, I can't remember, there was a James Bond game. I can't remember what it was for. It might have been for The Living Daylights. And the big thing that was made about it was that it contained digitized speech. And it was going to be incredible. And so it took absolutely ages to load. It may well, I think it was on the 48K, but I mean, in games in those days, you know, probably took 5 or 6 minutes to load. This took 7 or 8. It took forever. And you inevitably get an R-tape loading error at the end of it and have to start again. And what would happen is you got this kind of really rubbish white circle going across the screen, like the gun barrel. And then this little stick fella walks into the middle. And this noise out of this tiny little speaker just goes, James Bond, James Bond.
Was that Timothy Dalton?
Very smooth. I don't know who it was. And it was
rubbish.
Just like, and then when it had done that, then you had to load the game up afterwards. And it was like, oh, dear, that was another game that got massively hyped back in the day was Sam Fox's Strip Poker.
Yeah, there you go.
Loaded up incredibly slowly as well. And it was the most basic of poker games before you got through five digitized pixelated screens until eventually, if you squinted, you might have just been able to make out the fact that there were some lady breasts on display. That was very much style over content.
I think you've got a point here, a kind of theme between the two things. It's when the games try and incorporate real aspects of real life, like they're trying to digitally replicate Kate. What was her name? I've already forgotten it.
Sam Fox.
God. When you're trying to digitally replicate Sam Fox or actually get people's voices in there. Another one for me that I remember when I was in the arcades, I used to grow up on a seaside town, and there was always a shooter there which looked really kind of cool, but you knew it was rubbish. It was the Aerosmith spin-off shooter. Does anyone remember that? Revolution X? They're trying to take actual images of real people and, you know, they're terrorists kidnapping youths and stopping youth culture and
what
stuff.
What was the Cowboys one?
Bad Dog McGraw.
What was it called, that?
Yeah.
Mad Dog McGraw. And it was like, there'll be some varmints on the way. Yeah. And you'd actually shoot at the screen and then it would
flash and someone would fall over. Yeah. That was actually a relatively good one, I think.
You've just reminded me there, of course, as well as one of the first arcade games
Pit Fighter.
I got excited about seeing and put my money into was Dragon's Lair, was it called?
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of these video disc ones, and you'd watch this, you know, incredibly well-made Disney-style cartoon, and you would, like, be watching it, and then suddenly you'd be dead, and you realise what happens is you would suddenly supposed to hit left on the joystick, and that would trigger the correct cutscene and all this sort of stuff. And it was impossible to go on, so much so that I think when the second one came out, was it called Dragon's Lair?
Yeah, yeah. And you know they've released it actually on just basic DVD. You can play it on your DVD players these
days. Oh, why not? Yeah.
Yeah, Dragon's Lair.
When they did this the follow-up to it, it just basically, you'd watch this thing and then suddenly a big arrow pointing left would flash up on the screen and then you'd know to hit the joystick. But you'd have a split second in which to do it. And I mean, that was an example of them spending, God knows how much they spent.
It was like the Sword in the Stone, that style, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I tell you what, I know we're tight on time. I'm going to just ask each of you, I'll give mine first, games that look brilliant and play brilliantly.
You've already said mine. It's Metal Gear 4.
It's Metal Gear 4.
Oh my God, just visually stunning.
I'm going to go for three games here. The first is Super Mario Galaxy.
Oh yeah,
when you look at it, you go, "Oh my word, this is awesome!" And then you play it, and I think it actually plays better, even better than it actually looks. The other two I've gone for, Micro Machines 1 and 2 on the Mega Drive. I thought they were absolutely awesome.
Back in the day, yeah.
If you're talking sort of 93 Codemasters,
yeah.
And then Micro Machines 2, which came with the second two sets of slots in the game itself, and then you could play, was it 8-player?
Yeah, I had that on the PS1. I remember many a good night with two multi-taps up and a few cans and just playing Micro Machines for hours.
That's a prime example of just the where you limit yourself and you give yourself a really simplistic brief of the game is so simple, you've got to race each other off the screen.
Yeah.
And when they strip back the design and make it really so simple, so it's just large versions of things we expect to see.
Driving
small.
Around on a pool table and stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's fantastic that they had an idea, they had a vision, and they executed it, and they made gameplay the most important part of it. And those are amazing.
I actually
games.
Want to play that now. Just thinking about it again. Great
games
times.
Games that look great and play fantastic as well. I'm going to throw originally on the GameCube, then on the Wii, Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
That was really good. It was massive in scope. It looked fantastic. It looked better, I think, than any GameCube game had ever looked.
Yeah,
it was absolutely staggering, and it was fantastic to play it. The learning curve was perfectly judged. That was just superb. That's still one of the best games, I think.
Okay, well, just to finish, we've talked about games that look great, play great, don't play so well. And we now want to talk about games that when you look at them, you think, what on earth is this? But actually, the gameplay, the playability in it, vastly outweighs it. It's hard to think of an example, I think, for this, because I think you have the graphics develop a charm. If you like the gameplay, you become charmed by the graphics, even if they don't look so great. I know I'm a big fan. I've got Bomberman Blast on WiiWare and Bomberman 93. I'll always play Bomberman 93, though. Obviously, it doesn't look as good, but the style of it, I think, suits the gameplay more.
Yeah,
that's the best example I think I can find.
I think, and it's a very simplified game experience as well. They're not trying to mess around with real 3D environments or anything like that. So it's just hard, good back to basics, blowing stuff up.
The only other example out of that was Geometry Wars, a game which actually the style of it is not designed to be looking absolutely fantastic, but in being what it is, it does look fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. And when they put out the HD version, it actually really did kind of shine even more.
Geometry Wars is fantastic. But an example where you can get that wrong was, I don't know if you've ever played Space Giraffe, which is kind of a similar sort of visual experience, lots of sort of wireframe, two-dimensional things, lots of bright colours, yet was just impenetrable, was impossible to play, whereas Geometry Wars, although it gets intense, you really feel that you're in control while you're playing it.
With someone to try and get the phrase Space Giraffe into this podcast?
I've never heard of it.
Is that a real game?
That's a real game, and that is developed by LlamaSoft, which also makes it sound like I'm making it up.
For sure.
Yeah, it was Adam's Jeff Minter's game, and he spoke really, yeah, talked big about it, and it never really caught fire.
He has a thing about llamas, doesn't he, Jeff Minter? He's made a few yes, games, and he always has a llama in them. It's one of those funny little niche things.
Adam's just double checking it. Yes, I can confirm. Yeah. Yes, the space giraffe did exist. There I can't believe that.
I've got a game that I think looks ugly as sin, and yet it is just a dream to play. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Disgaea series of RPGs. They've been around for about 6 or 7 years. But you know what? They've just released one on the PS3 and it looks exactly the same as it did on the PS2.
They just released one on DS, I think,
So, and exactly the same graphics as what you're going to get on the PS3, really. But it's one of these immersive RPGs that people just get charmed by it. You know, and there's hours and hours of text that you've got to read. It's not voiced, I don't think, half of it these days. But it's just a really charming, really exciting and enjoyable game.
The original Pokemon games, really not particularly graphically impressive in comparison to, you know, other stuff that Nintendo were turning out. But, you know, you can lose your life into those. Yeah. And the amazing thing as well is the game is pretty much scissors, paper, stone. That's pretty much what it is. Is, you know, someone else holds up their scissors and you think, right, well, I'll pick a stone to fight that then. That's pretty much it. But that was incredible to play. And going, you know, obviously the classic in this genre of really simple, you know, not particularly attractive graphics is Tetris, which, you know, I'm sure we've all lost vast amounts
but that's
of time
where the graphics actually suit the purpose of the gameplay. Anything that was any snazzier as sort of these other Tetris Worlds games and all those have found out,
wouldn't you?
You think, well, actually it doesn't need that.
So what are we saying, actually, that the style isn't how good the graphics are but just how well conceived the game is? Is that our final point?
I think that would certainly be the case of Geometry Wars.
Let's stick a full stop on that. Okay, that was episode 3A of A Link to the Cast.
And if you've got any gaming turds that you thought, you know, were really hyped, do let us know. There's so many out
And if
there,
you can think of a better name than a gaming turd for a game you don't really like, then you can find the email. It's all on alinktothecast.co.uk. Do check that out. I've been Mick. Rick's been here as well, and Brian Shelf as well. We're going to be back in, depending on when you're listening to this, a couple of weeks. We'll have the end of May podcast. All the reviews on it are going to feature games which are downloadable only. Not linked to another game that are already out. It's got to be all DLC, so they'll all be downloadable games. You may have noticed if you've gone into a game shop, there's not a lot out there at the moment. It's a bit barren at the moment. Yeah. So we're going to do it all downloadable content. A Link to the Cast, thanks for joining us. We'll speak to you again very soon.